The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio are certified financial planners Cole Hammack and Tony Payne. Hey, guys. Good to have you here. We've been having fun before we started recording.
We always have fun. It's great to be here with you.
It's a good group.
Good combination of personalities here. This is a topic today is really going to be interesting for our listeners, I believe. Hits a pretty heavy audience and lots to learn. So let's get into it. Want to talk about tips for successful professionals to manage debt wisely, then when to borrow, when to pay off, how to keep it tax efficient, specifically high income debt structuring. So I'm going to kind of throw some things. This is obviously out of my lane, so I'm going to kind of, you know, riff. Have you guys riff back and forth?
Okay, we can do that. Absolutely. This is a really great topic, obviously, so I'm ready to dive in. This is
ready
something that a lot of people deal with who are in that world.
Right. Yeah. Let's first talk about when to leverage low interest debt versus accelerating repayments. So, you know, a lot of people get the urge to pay off their mortgage early. Especially the longer you have the mortgage and the more income you start to make and the fatter life gets, you do start to wonder, is this something I should do now or later? What's the benefit of keeping it? So tell me what scenario might be a good one to keeping the loan and investing the cash instead.
I think a lot of that ultimately really does come down to a personality basis, because there's the math of it, right? The idea that if on average, if you annualize a rate of return in investments, you get 8%. That's kind of the expectation. Then if you have a debt that's like sub 3%, sub 4%, that's good debt, right? Because the idea is if we take that excess cash flow, we pay it off against the debt, that's cash flow we're not putting in the market, seeing that long-term rate of return. So the mathematically, you probably favor the investing in that standpoint versus debt reduction. But there are plenty of people, and it's okay, right? Everyone's going to view finances a little bit differently, especially when it comes to debt, where you just can't sleep at night. It doesn't matter if it's a 2.5% rate, a 3, 4, whatever. If you're not losing sleep, that's an argument to start paying that one off, irrespective of what you may be able to get elsewhere.
Yeah, no, those are great points, Cole, because you're right. It's peace of mind for a lot of this. Because ideally, you're a high income earner, you're a high net worth person, why would you even have debt? You know, if it's all about I'm living within my means, well, then my means would mean, why do I have debt? And we know it. There's good reasons. Like you said, maybe there's a lower interest rate in one area, higher in the other. Maybe one's tax favored, maybe the other isn't. I mean, there's a lot of considerations that could go into it. But I think, Cole, you really did nail it. There's the what I might call the Excel spreadsheet math of interest paid, interest accumulated. Then there's the how do I feel about it? And that how do I feel about it is really important, because if you're already nagging or it's already nagging at you, ask yourself these questions. How would I feel if I lost my job? How would I feel if the economy turned? How would I feel if my health failed? If you can answer all those and in your head you're still comfortable, you're probably using the right debt. You're probably using it efficiently. But if your answer is, I'm not sure, or I'm nervous about that, I don't know that it comes back to the math on any of that so much as let's button up the plan before we worry about leveraging things, because that's what debt is. Debt's leverage, and leverage isn't always bad, but we gave a couple scenarios where it could be terrible.
Yeah, I got to use it right.
And especially when we're talking about credit card debt, and even high-income earners have credit card debt, it seems. So that's interesting. We talk a lot about behavioral finance, and as somebody who's outside that circle, you don't think about that. You don't think about how you're raised to understand money and the kind of things that you go through to learn how to manage your money. But it's so relevant. It's the foundation. There's a lot of resources to learn more about that. And you really, we would encourage you to learn more about that so that you can get real with yourself. But the, from my perspective, are you always, when somebody comes in, are you always, always is an absolute, or do you have people that come in where you really have to kind of have a strong meeting with them to understand their spending?
Oh,
as
definitely.
Far as debt is concerned at this level?
Well, more even than that of one meeting, this is the part of the ongoing relationship, because if you meet someone in one of those times, maybe they lost their job or health has changed or they lost a parent, they may not be their normal self. I don't know how else to say it. So having that ongoing relationship where it's almost like a physician, you know, get your well visit so they know you're neutral mm-hmm. with debt, with a lot of finances, I would encourage that, because then you can start to gauge and build that. Okay, what are the spending patterns? What do they value? Is this an anomaly? Is this they've waited 20 years and they wanted to do this and they finally did it? Or was this a whim? You really have to dive in, and it's about the people again, but the idea of there can be a few different answers there. I believe that.
Yeah, and I think part of it too is it really depends on the debt. Like, we should always be talking about living expenses, cash flow. Like, that's key. That's going to drive everything. But you'll have people that'll come to us where maybe they are with 5+ figures in credit card debt, where we really need to evaluate what got us here. Because it's one thing to come up with a solution, right? There's hundreds of things you can do to get rid of it. But at the end of the day, if you don't understand the why that happened or the how that happened, we can go through all these resources, get it taken care of, and then several months later wind up in the same place. So that's really tricky.
How do you deal with that? You've got humans in front of you. It's like slapping the wrist of a child. I mean, how do you really truly get through to somebody other than having them feel the pain of walking that fire, through that fire? How do you help them to get past it and so that they can actually change and brain train themselves differently?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it just coaching, edifying, and just awareness, I think, is key, because that's one thing that often gets away from us just in our day-to-day. We have a million things going on. If we have kids, we have work, we have all these obligations that we're probably not paying attention to what's actually happening behind the scenes, or we're just swiping the credit card without thinking twice. That's life, right? It's easy. So to actually be able to sit down and go through, well, how did I spend? Not just how much did I spend? That's the crucial piece. And I think that's where you really see the eyes start to open, because there's all these the leakages that happen just in daily life that you probably didn't even realize before. So it's the understanding's really half the battle there.
How often do you vet your spreadsheet? Do you do it every month? Your spending?
Depends on who you're asking. Craig would say, what, every Monday?
Probably. And for those on the opposite, where if you're living and you don't see your accounts going down, you don't see the debt adding, perhaps you're not doing that, but maybe once a year, maybe not even mm-hmm. that. And that's where, again, you really have to gauge it. But the idea of meeting someone new, if I were sitting with someone I just met, certainly we're going to have those details. We'll talk about it, hopefully quarterly, move beyond that. If there's a great habit and pattern and there's other issues, well, cash flow isn't the main issue. And that
exactly.
Cash flow is what drives credit and debt. And that's the piece of the finance puzzle that, you know what, that we have to focus on. But if that's great, maybe we'll go to another piece like insurance or your estate or the kids' college planning. Mm-hmm. But that cash flow piece drives everything, like Cole said.
So it's not about what you make. It's about what you spend.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
From the tax perspective, this next point is really for business owners. So let's just say a business owner has multiple loans, some personal, some for the business, and they want to understand, you know, if they're missing any tax advantages. Are there really good ways to shift that debt around? I mean, to get more tax benefits, or are you kind of stuck with what you have?
This is a great question. And I know that the typical answer you'll hear a lot here is it depends. So I'm not going to say that, but keep that in the back of your mind, please.
And we're not tax, yeah. We're not tax accountants. I need to throw that out
good
there.
Good disclosure. Yeah,
definitely. And to the idea, though, of when I'm in business, anything that I'm putting into my business, hey, that's an investment. And then that's part of talking to your tax professional. Is it deductible? How much? What percentage? But you're making investments when you're putting money in your business. And that might be across personal cards, a business card. You got money from a family member. You put it in the business and you still owe the family member. So some of this really does involve sitting down with a professional so that they can understand the situation, because the way you describe it to them, it may set off a bulb that goes, oh, this is business debt. This isn't personal, because the government treats it way different. You know, the interest on fun stuff, I went on trips to Europe or whatever, that's a lot different than, hey, I borrowed $100 million to build a factory. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they incentivize that kind of debt, and that's a good thing, mm-hmm. we think. So the idea of, if I can rightfully and within reason say that this was a business expense and within an investment of my business, well, that's going to be a lot more tax favorable typically if it's truly an investment in the business, of course.
So make sure you have a strong relationship with a good tax accountant.
Yeah, I guess one thing before we move on, just to add to that, because you had referenced having business debt and personal mm-hmm. debt, the important thing is also don't commingle. Mm-hmm. Now, I think we might get into that a little bit more too, but the idea being is if we blend personal and business things together when we shouldn't, we can create a lot of issues and a lot of headaches down the line.
So if you are a sole proprietor and you have an LLC, I don't know, is that the same thing?
Yeah, okay. You can have it.
You have an LLC, you're working out of your home, and you're being paid by other organizations. That money goes into a business account. Are you supposed to pay yourself every month out of that account to your personal account?
I love it. I'm going to run with this one, Tracy. This is one of my favorites.
This might be too fundamental for this topic.
No, I'm just curious. But if you think about where does debt come from with a lot of business owners, especially early on, it's because of interruptions to cash flow. It's because cash flow may not have been managed well. So if you can start the waterfall the right way, I mean, it's very common. You think about it, you're in business, you're doing well, you're successful, you make some business investments, you owe some taxes. Well, maybe you made more investments than what you put to the side. Because, hey, I did more in business than what I thought. It's a good problem to have. And then all of a sudden, you've got to live. You're taking money out personally for the things you do. And like Cole said, that could be commingling. You might do that all in one account. We don't encourage that at all.
For sure.
As you said, Cole, separation.
That seems like it would be messy.
And it is for a lot of people.
It is.
Yeah. And again, you think about the founder. They are a living embodiment of the business. They're living that 24/7. So is it my business? Is it no, it's mm-hmm. all me. This is the business. I am the business.
Right.
So it makes sense. So to try to set this up the right way, and I know I'm going to go on a little tangent here, but it starts with that business cash reserve. If you can have that business reserve for interruptions, for a missed payroll, again, think about your business and what's there, then you can start to say, what am I drawing every couple weeks or what's my pay schedule? And then you've started that waterfall of, well, income comes in, it goes to the business. I've got a reserve in case I'm interrupted. Now I'm getting a regular pay.
Should those be in the same account, the reserve and the flow of the...
Depending upon how you do things. I mean, some people can see it and they know to separate it. Others get it out of sight, out of mind. But the real important piece, though, is they should be in the name of the business. You're not commingling things. Mm-hmm. And this is really important, too, because accountants hear this and they think immediately that you're talking about taking a salary, taking a W-2. And that's where accountants may just reflexively go, oh, you don't want to do that. Because that may trigger more payroll taxes, other obligations. Well, what's the difference in a regular paycheck and a regular draw, Cole?
Just referencing payroll taxes?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah, it's just it. Yeah. That's it. So the idea of if you were the business owner and you set up your regular two-week draw, it's not a paycheck, it's not your salary, but you're taking money out on a scheduled basis.
And it's the same amount.
Exactly, mm-hmm. same amount. But now you can plan your personal life a little better. Mm-hmm. You know when your mortgage is due, when rent's due, your car, anything else in your personal life. And now you can start to build your personal cash reserve. Because, again, think about the chain of events.
Oh, I see what you mean.
For the business owner, it starts that the business does bad. It goes down, I didn't pay taxes or I missed something, and then I'm not making my pay, and then it goes to your missing credit card payments personally. Mm-hmm. And the idea would be hopefully you're reading your business income, you're keeping track of your quarterly, how your business is doing, your financials, and adjusting some of that along the way, which again, if you're the founder, you're the living embodiment of the business, you don't feel like having a lot of time for bookkeeping, mm-hmm. but that's how you avoid these problems.
Yes.
Because then you've set up a regular income for you personally, you've got a reserve for your business, and then personally, if something else happens, I don't need to draw out money from my business and pay taxes on it and create create a bigger tax bill for myself down the road, it's purposeful that I'm creating income that I may not need, but I can set aside as a personal reserve. That's the order of operations, I think. And again, I know accountants will differ, and there are different strategies, but fundamentally that helps you avoid the interruption that, oh my, now I need to swipe a card, now I need to miss a payment, and then the cycle's bad and it continues.
What if you have your cash reserves set up in an interest-earning account?
Yep.
And you have your business account, and then you have your personal account, right? So you have the savings account with your emergency slush fund.
Yep.
And then you've got your business and your personal account. And your business account is a little short. Can you pull money out of that personal savings account and dump it into your business account and then funnel it through your personal account? Is that how that works?
You could. I mean, again, not to overcomplicate, but the idea of if it's in my personal account or anywhere I put it in the business, that's the investment.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's okay to go backwards that way if you need to do that.
It would. Mm-hmm. And that way, again, it's an investment, which may be a positive tax treatment rather than taking money out of the business account for something that now you got to pay taxes and pay that bill you needed.
Mm-hmm. All right, speaking of accounts, we talk a lot about HELOCs. Let's tell people what that means exactly, because we don't want to talk in acronyms.
So just the acronym as the HELOC, or Home Equity Line of Credit. So basically taking out a credit line based on the equity available in your home.
Okay, so we've got HELOCs, margin loans. That's something I've never heard you guys talk about. Let's
we try not to.
That's for good reason.
Yep.
We'll
are those dirty
that
words?
One.
Okay.
Yep.
Structured debt for liquidity. That's something that we can explain?
It is. It is.
In very short term?
We'll see how short term when we get there.
Okay. A physician is looking to buy into a private practice.
Yep.
This happens all the time with physicians that are branching out, want to start their own thing, mm-hmm. but doesn't want to drain their savings or sell investments at a bad time. So an example scenario is that they might need cash for a big opportunity like this, but they don't want to pull from their investments. So what are some of the best options for somebody like this?
Yeah. Well, this
using
is
using these tools,
yeah.
I guess, right?
Well, there are these tools and even more. So I'll share that before we go much. And really, like you said earlier, Cole, there are tons of options. And as we do this on this program, we're trying to share general ideas. We can't cover every scenario. That's why you'll hear that. It depends a lot. So we're trying to give the best of general advice here. What would, again, you can dig in deeper with professionals. So something like an SBA loan.
That's immediately what
I thought. The Small Business Administration.
Yep.
So depending upon your qualifications, depending upon how comfortable you are with the ability for them to review your books, some people, they hesitate and they don't want an SBA loan because immediately they think that means they're sharing everything with the government, which may be the case. I mean, if they want to audit you and how you spent those funds, you better have good records.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things where everything comes with a cost sometimes, and even the idea of going to your bank and saying, I'd like a personal loan. It's like a giant credit card almost that you're getting on your own good name, but that may be a resource if you needed to make that investment and buy into a practice. So there's a couple ways to do that. Cole, I don't know if you're thinking of any others.
Yeah, well, so as the SBA loan was immediately where my head went, because hearing the ones we listed, right, the HELOC, the margin loan, I would be terrified to use those to buy into a practice, the idea being that we're leveraging the equity in our own home. Right, an individual personal property to buy into this business that hopefully does well, but if fails, negatively impacts where we live, that would scare me to death.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to interrupt, but I still struggle hearing that I lost it all. I lost it because in our world, we just try to set everything up in such a way that's not even possible.
Absolutely right.
And then you hear something like, I put it all on the home and then I lost the business and then they took the home because I didn't declare bankruptcy. I just didn't have the cash flow mm-hmm. to support it. And that's that terrible scenario where depending upon how you structure things, you should be thinking about the negatives. And again, being a business owner and having some of that founder mentality, you don't want to think about it failing. I get that. But plan for realistic scenarios, and businesses do fail.
Yep.
Your health can fail. You might have a wonderful idea, but someone else across the world had it too at half the cost. So as much as you want to invest in your business, the idea of diversifying, even when you get that great income and you could roll it back in your business, that's how we try to help avoid that lose-it-all scenario, which, again, goes back to debt and credit and cash flow management.
That's a great segue to the next discussion point. Let's say somebody's guaranteed a business loan when they start out, But, you know, and they're trying to manage personal guarantees on their business loans really is the overarching conversation.
Oh, yeah.
How do they get their name off of it once the business is doing well? Or is that something that's even a concern? Let's say a lawyer started their own firm, had to personally guarantee a loan, but's now in a stronger financial position and wants to reduce their liability.
Refinance the loan.
Yeah.
Have it strictly in the name of the business at that point.
Take it
get
out
your
name
off of everything.
Off of
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's you run into a
even with an umbrella policy that protects you personally, that would be the best route to go.
And even if the umbrella is just strictly liability, so if anything else happens at the business level, then it can still claw back to you personally.
Wow.
And that, honestly, on that note, to bring it up, because it can be very, there's a lot of confusing stuff here. The umbrella policy is only personal, too.
Mm-hmm.
So for that business owner that maybe they're running a daycare at home and they also have an SUV and they're out with the SUV, something happens, that umbrella is covering them personally. And if there were kids from that daycare in that SUV, that umbrella most likely is not going to cover that because you were using it for your business. That's where a business or commercial liability policy comes in. And that's, again, where those gaps come in of how did you lose it all or how did bad things happen. If you weren't properly insured, $1 million settlement, that'll do that to you.
Does it make sense for somebody who works out of their home full time to have both business insurance and personal umbrella insurance? I mean, what if
who are they working for would be the question. If they're working for another company at home, they're still personal. They're still at home. And again, I'm not a lawyer, but just reading it, that would make the most sense. And if they're working at home on their own business, well, then, yes, if you're in business, you might have an errors and omissions for what you did. Maybe you have a liability. You're having people come to the house and someone slips. I mean, it really depends on the kind of business. But, again, it's a great question because you start getting into this higher net worth, higher income. That normal insurance you had or that state minimum you got when you got out of college, that is grossly low. And, again, a gap for where can my cash flow get interrupted? I'm doing really well in the world. How could I lose it? It's that. It's that kind of stuff, being underinsured.
That's actually a great point because I want to talk about student loans, refinancing high income professional loans, maybe medical, legal, business loans. So how do you feel about refinancing student loans once somebody's making good money? I mean, would that actually limit your flexibility for somebody, maybe a surgeon with significant medical school debt? And they're considering refinancing, but they're not sure if locking in a lower rate is the right move long term for them.
I think you brought up a great point, though, by limiting flexibility. So sometimes it can absolutely make sense, right? If you're walking away from the school, you have federal loans at 6%, 7%, 8%. We can refinance to 3% or 4%. It'd be really hard for me to say no. But the benefit of those federal loans is they allow far more options than you get just at the private loan side. So once you do that refinance, the term starts, we're making those payments. If we miss those payments, we're in trouble. But with federal loans, there are options for deferment. If for whatever reason, income change, or we can adjust to an income-based repayment schedule if we do see a considerable or long-term reduction. So there's a lot more flexibility that even just like graduating as we're getting our feet footing under us, we're figuring out where cash flow goes, it could make sense to maintain that federal, even if the interest would suggest refinancing it, just until we understand really where we are.
Yeah. Uncle Sam's a little nicer than Mr. Sam.
That's well said.
We can just say it that way. And then the other piece to that,
they make it so enticing. The marketing really does make it sound like it's a win to refinance your student loans through private
funding.
It can be.
And there's it can be, for sure. And then the other side, though, of are they bringing up what you're losing in all those commercials? That's what I never see.
Exactly.
And that's hopefully what we're talking about bringing up to people. Because, again, you're doing well. You want to get rid of that debt. You're excited. Your investments obviously paid off in your education. Sometimes it is the right move to max out your retirement plan, pay off other debt, pay off the car, start saving, and make the minimum payments on those loans for a couple of years while you're getting your feet under you.
If somebody's got mortgage debt and student loan debt as a high income earner, which one makes better sense to pay off early? Is it, or do either
Can we, like, 3, 2, 1, go and see if we say the same thing?
Oh, no. Okay. You first, Cole.
I was going to say pay off student loans first.
I agree with that one.
Perfect. Because the idea is just from a deductibility standpoint, student loans, once your income, I think it's over $150,000, but it might adjust. I'm not 100%. The interest is no longer deductible for those student loan payments versus the mortgage payments. As long as the balance is below, I think it's $750,000, all of that interest paid is deductible.
So throw it all at your student loans if you have extra.
Yeah. And generally speaking, the student loan rates are usually higher. Again, right now things are funny, but usually higher than what you'll see on a mortgage loan.
You know my rants too. I know it's a big deal. And for a lot of people, I understand it is. But if you really did well and made those investments, the amount of student loans compared to what you should be earning, that shouldn't be a burden. And if you think about your initial years out of school, that's probably the least amount of money you're going to make in your career, hopefully. Well, why are you tying up a disproportionate amount of your money on student loans that you got the next 15 years or 20 to pay? So when you're in year 5 or 6 and you've developed and you've built a reserve and you've been saving, no one says you can't pay extra then or refi then. And the other piece to this, that just for the math side, think about this. You can have a higher interest rate and pay less interest because you have a smaller balance. Mm-hmm. So even though you may refi later at a higher rate or something, it may be better because you're still refiing on a much lower amount of money. So I would just keep that in mind. Again, those good go-getters who want to do the right things, the natural urge to pay off debt is there. But once it's paid, it's paid. We'd say it's non-retrievable. You know, you put your money against your $300,000 loans, you write the check, you celebrate. No one drops any balloons, by the way. No one celebrates,
no
aside
problem.
From you. And you don't have that $300,000 anymore. That is an opportunity cost. It's not working for you. It's not available for cash flow. Maybe your life changes or your income changes where some of those goodies Cole mentioned might have applied, and now they don't because you refinanced it or you paid ahead.
Mm-hmm. All right, great. So the last leg of this conversation is really, really important. It talks about estate planning. If somebody's passing away, and we talk a lot about estate planning, how important it is to have a living will, financial power of attorney, medical power of attorney, all that good stuff. But what's the impact of debt structuring on estate planning and asset protection? So if a business executive is thinking about how their debt could affect their family.
Yeah.
If something happens to them or somebody passes away with outstanding loans, what happens?
I'm going to say with a great big smile, that is a wonderful question. And I hope no credit card companies are listening because typically what happens is the person who owed the debt personally in that situation, assuming it was in one person's name, the credit card company normally eats it. And unfortunately, and this is the sad part, most Americans can't deal with a $1,000 emergency. Mm-hmm. So if you think about you, the credit card company, most estates don't have a lot of money in them. So they could. If you go out and rack up a couple $100,000, they're going to look at that. I guarantee that. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, that is something where it seems to be forgiven in most cases, and they don't go after the estate to collect it or take it out of the house and even up. So, Cole, I don't know if you've had different experience.
I was just going to add to that point you're making that they may, at least from my understanding, is they may still sell that debt to a collections company who may reach out to the heirs, though. In the idea being where if you pay that, then you're assuming that debt, to your point. So that, well, generally speaking, you want to consult with an attorney, but it shouldn't be attachable basically to the heirs on that credit card side. So make sure that we're not signing up for paying for anything that we shouldn't be.
And on the other side, if there was a loan that was collateralized or someone, you basically borrowed against something, you borrowed against your house, mm-hmm. you borrowed against your portfolio, those kinds of loans don't get wiped out. Those right. are the ones where there's an asset secured against that. They may need to refi, close it out. Even in a divorce scenario, you think about refiing, getting that mortgage in the other person's name if they're keeping the home. That could be a pretty tricky process. And then if someone passes during that, you're looking at a pretty big mess. So it's really important to make sure you have the estate in order with the debt that you have, because if it is personal, that's one thing. But if it's collateralized or if there's something attached to it, you definitely want to know that you've got the money to take care of that.
Got it. This has been really enlightening. Is there anything else you want to bring to the table before we close? Did I cover it?
Just as an end to that last point, how do you cover it if you don't have the cash? Plan for insurance early. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're young, healthy, and the new business is out there and growing, and you wonder why you'd buy insurance.
Life insurance.
Well, life and thank you.
Specifically.
Life insurance, you could qualify. Maybe you're still in that great health. And then later on, you've signed up for that debt. Where's the money come from? The business didn't grow yet because I'm not here. Well, then that's something that could also help protect your family.
Great.
That's a great point.
Thank you very much. That's it for today. We hope you found some really good tips on managing your debt and making it work for you. And we appreciate you listening. Don't forget to share with your friends, and we'll catch you on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.